Campus FM presents 100 Years of Women on Campus, produced and presented by Patricia Camilleri. Welcome to this anniversary series, remembering 100 years of women on campus. I'm Patricia Camilleri, and I shall be looking at this theme from many different angles, the sociological, the statistical, the anthropological, and the historical. I shall be asking questions about life for female students and academics on and off campus, yesterday and today, and possibly also tomorrow. I'm very pleased to have with me today in the studio Mary-Rose Coleiro, Josette Magri, and Sue Garcia Imbernon. Welcome to you all, ladies. In a few words, I shall try and explain why these three lovely women are with me today in the studio. They're here to represent three other ladies, all graduated as pharmaceutical chemists from this university. Their names were Rita, who graduated PhD and BSc in 1939, Lucia, who graduated PhD in 1945, and Mary, who graduated PhD in 1945 and BSc in 1946. And they were the De Mayo sisters. Listeners might ask why, amongst all the early University of Malta female graduates, I chose these three to talk about. My answer really is because I think that my guests' mothers, in the case of Mary-Rose and Josette, and grandmother, in the case of Sue, are not only interesting in their own rights, but are a very good example of how female participation in tertiary education has been taking shape since those years. So I shall be asking each of my guests about their mothers and their grandmother, and through hearing their stories, perhaps we can understand better what were the attitudes of the time and the challenges of women in work. However, firstly, I'd like to put these three ladies in a context of their time. The first degree students to complete their courses graduated in 1922, that's Tessie Camilleri B. Litt, and 1925, Blanche Huber, M.D. Between 1925 and 1939, when Rita De Mayo graduated, there had only been some six females who completed degree courses, and only another handful in the war years. So the fact that three ladies from the same family actually graduated at that time is in itself unusual. I'll start the narrative, and then I'll ask my guests to take up the story. The family was made up of Pasquale De Mayo, a dentist, and his wife Maria Concetta Lulbonavia, who lived in New York. And Mary-Rose will now explain to us exactly how that happened. They had six children, four girls and two boys, and the boys were Anthony, Tony, Thomas, Tommy. Both were graduates and professionals, but today, actually, we're going to concentrate on the girls, Rita, Lucia, and Mary. So, Mary-Rose, let's start off with you. Your mother was the eldest of the girls, and she was born in New York on 24th June 1917. Perhaps you can tell us how the family actually was in New York, why they were there.
Good morning. I'm very honored to be here and to talk about my mother and my two other aunts. They were a lovely family. The family, they had six children. My grandparents had six children. Five of them are graduates, as you have said, three chemists and two dentists. Now, my grandfather finished his schooling here in Malta. And when he went to the office, his brothers had the office, he went and they said, "I'm very sorry, there's only work for two people here. We can't afford to have a third family." So my grandfather decided to go to America. He started working and he also started studying dentistry. He had to support his wife and his sister because he took his sister with him to be a good company to his wife, as well as to look after her. She was under 18 at that time, and his two other elder brothers said, we cannot look after her, because my grandfather had lost both his parents. So he took her to Pia, his sister, there. And my grandmother didn't have children at the beginning, and my mother was born after 7.5 years of marriage. But in 10 years, they had 6 children. So my mother was born in America, and my grandfather continued studying and working, and then Annie, the second daughter, came along. Then my grandmother said, look, I think we're going to have a large family. We'd better go back to Malta, because this place is very fit for bears. It is too cold. So they came back to Malta, and of course my mother had all her schooling and her education here, as well as her brothers and sisters. They never returned to Malta. My mother graduated. When she had done her matric, she came first. And just for a few marks, she didn't get the government prize of £20, which was a good sum of money at that time. So when she went at university, she was always first in the course, and there were only 2 females against 23 males. And my mother did well. Then after she finished in 1939, she got married, but she never worked at that time. But when she graduated, they wouldn't give her the warrant. And my mother was very disappointed, because they said, you were born in America. You are not a Maltese or British citizen at that time. Malta was a colonial place. And then they found out that she was here for all those years. She was just born there, because she was only 2.5 years when she came back. But later on, she started working. When we grew up, we were 3, and we were boarders. And so my mother found out that she couldn't, what is she going to do? How is she going to spend her time? And she loved helping other people, always helping others. So one day, somebody came and she said, would you come and work for me at the pharmacy? Ah, she said, this is a good occasion for me to start work. So she asked my father, she said, can I start? Yes, he said, if you like to go. She had help in the house, she didn't do anything. So she went to work. And then she said, but why am I taking so much interest in this pharmacy? It doesn't belong to me. Why don't I open my own pharmacy? So she had a dream. And my father said, if you want to open a pharmacy, find the premises, we buy the premises, and you can start your work. She helped a lot of people in the pharmacy. Money was very difficult, and were hard times in the 50s.
Perhaps I can turn to Josette now and ask her about her own mother, who was Lucia, and perhaps something about how she also came to be a chemist herself.
Good morning. Yes, my mother was Lucia, and she was very proud that she was a Lucia, very different to the usual names. And she was interested in her sister being a chemist. I think, really and truly, she was not as ambitious, but seeing her father, having words with her father, who always pushed for education, she became a chemist. It was a hard time, as my cousin just pointed out. And she started working from scratch as soon as she graduated, as against her sister. She used to catch buses to Lua. She remained always a long time in the same pharmacy. And she changed pharmacies, crossing Bombay. And she was very good at it, because she loved her job. And she never missed out, so she worked from 9 to 1, 4 to 7. Obviously, there was a help at home to take care of us. We were not neglected. But what I remember clearly is that I never accepted the fact that she worked, and I was shy to tell my friends that she worked, as against all the other friends of mine, whose mother never worked. So it was not an honor in my eyes as a child. She loved her job. She loved giving advice as her sister. It was primarily that is why they worked as chemists. And she was very proud of wearing her jagaga, always ilamtata.
I love that bit.
It was very important.
Yes.
And every time she goes to a pharmacy, wear the ilamtata and the jagaga. She used to tell them off. shy. I used to be very shy of that, but she used to love it and was always ready, prepared for her, and always wearing it. She worked daily till she was 70. On her 70th birthday, she decided to stop every day, but the afternoons were cut off, and she only worked in the morning. She didn't drive, so she had to get lifts, but she never missed out. She was, thank God, never sick, and she hardly ever missed out. She checked on our homeworks, and the result was that she wanted education, because the grandfather wanted education, the mother, my mother, education, as her sister. There was only one who was not graduated. Annie was the second girl, but she loved life. She loved, that doesn't mean that the others did not love life, but they were more concentrating on their studying. Well, she got married when she was 18, and this was a different story for her.
It's interesting, this fact that you felt that it was strange that your mother should be working, whereas your friends' mothers didn't. Because actually, it took a long time for that, almost a stigma, perhaps is too strong a word, but that idea that it wasn't something normal. I remember people of my generation were not encouraged to go to university because, you know, people at the time, the idea of the mother working was sort of a bit strange somehow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I remember it took me very long for me to say why my mother was not at home.
And do you think that the fact that both their parents, because this is coming across as well, because I've spoken also to your other cousin, that the parents were, both were, the father and the mother were keen that the children should study.
Yes, they should study.
And that was sort of taken on then by the next generation.
Exactly. And she always said, "Levo l'educazione un battle flus." That was her primary idea in life. Mm. In fact, the three of us are graduates.
Well, perhaps I can pass to Sue. Sue, obviously, is a granddaughter, and not a daughter, but I've been told that you have memories. Actually, you do remember your grandmother.
Yes, I definitely do remember my grandmother. Unfortunately, she died when I was only 5 years old, but I have very fond memories of her, and I even see her, obviously, in my mother, because I feel that they have the same smile, the same approach in life as well. And I remember that she was very determined, and going back to their studying, of course, I would not have heard this firsthand, but always growing up, studying, going to university was something that was kind of expected. She was very determined because she studied during the war, and my mother always says that because of the war going on, the windows used to have to be blacked out, so she used to study by candlelight. So it really shows the determination that she had, and she went on to get the BSc, and then she worked as well for a few years until then she had her first child, and then it was kind of expected at the time that you had to stop. In fact, she always used to say that she regrets not going on to study medicine because her husband was a doctor. And she always felt that she could also have been a doctor, but at the time it was something
that... Well, it wasn't
that,
so common, definitely not, as you heard from the statistics at the beginning.
Yes, because she graduated the year before she got married, and then it was kind of expected to stop studying and then plan for a family. So that was a regret that she had in life. But if I could share maybe some of the memories I have, she used to play a lot with us, so there was no game that she would not play with us. I remember also... picking oranges and lemons in the garden with her, and then we would say, okay, can we have some now? Like, first we have to give to the neighbors, so we used to go around all the neighbors in Baltzan, give out lemons and oranges, and then we could have some for ourselves. She was also famous for her cakes, which she used to love to bake, and I like to think that I inherited that from her because I love to bake cakes and sweets. And she was always smiling. I never remember her being angry. And when I ask my mother, she says, not even with us. She was never angry. She always reasoned with us. And that's why I say I see my mother in her, because my mother is the same smiley face, where she never got angry with us growing up. There was discipline, but always with reason. So we would always understand why certain things were not allowed.
Perhaps this is a good moment to bring in Dr. Tania Bella, Mary's daughter, and Sue's aunt, who, as she's abroad, kindly spoke to me over the phone earlier this morning. Dr. Bella, I'd like to ask you first if you have some personal recollection of your mother that has perhaps remained with you over the years.
There are a couple. They're very personal. I think the most beautiful one is when we were young kids and it was very cold, and after After our bath, I always distinctly remember my mother putting our vests inside her chest so that when she would actually dress us, they would be warm, not ice cold. I think that's one of the most beautiful ones I have heard.
That's a lovely thought.
Yeah, well, it's very special. It's remained with me, and I think she had this wonderful smile which lit up her face, and you felt safe with her, you know? And I think she attracted, a lot of people loved her, you know? She was a very people person. So I take these with me, because even her tone on the telephone, you know, with patients, she had a lovely soft voice. And it wasn't artificial, you know, it was real. So that's the warmest. And then the funny one is when you knew when she had had enough, she wouldn't say anything, but she'd start moving furniture around. And you'd go back into the home and you'd say, hey, what happened here? and that would, you knew that mummy had enough. But there were some things you could change in that and some things you can't. So she would change around the furniture.
What a good idea. I'll remember that one. And as a professional working mother, I mean, they weren't very common in the past. Did you take your mother's and also perhaps your aunt's academic achievements for granted when you were growing up, or did you recognize them as being a little bit special?
Well, they were special people, but I don't think it had, at least for me, anything to do with the fact that they were graduates. I think it was so much part of the obvious thing that we were going to do. It wasn't something that we were impelled to do. It just happened naturally that we would also go to university. But I think this came down from the fact that their own father drummed it into their minds that the only way that they could be sort of economically free, you know, as individuals, was to go to university. And since he had boys and girls, and I think he also came from a background, from a social background that needed desperate climbing in his mind, and he had to migrate to do that and then come back and sort of climb the ladder. And I think that he realized that both, you know, his social, economic, and even political emancipation, whether you're a man or a woman, had to do with being economically free, you know. And he always told them that, please go to university. This is what my mother always told me. You go to university because if your husband has mistresses and asks you to wash their underwear, you can say goodbye. You have a choice, you know.
I love
so
that one.
So that's something, yeah, I love it too. And I must say that it's sort of a passport to freedom that you have just in case, you know? Sort of had that. I think we all remember this, but I can speak only for myself. This is, for me, something, I wouldn't say it's guided my own choices, but it's there, you know, in your DNA.
It's there in the background all the time.
Yes.
Well, thank you very, very much, Dr. Vella, for your intervention today. It'll be interesting to hear what your cousins have to say, but I'm sure that there will be a lot of similarities, and I'm very grateful for you having agreed to this phone call.
I really do appreciate it, and I think the type of program that you've put together is really, I think, needed, and because there are so many forgotten women, you know, in academia, so, and at university, and it also, they're also mentors for people who are perhaps nervous about entering, you know, why on earth should we take on studies when we can easily earn a good living at 16 or 17, and I think they were economically free.
They were good role models.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank
and
you.
Good luck and
thank
say
you.
Hello to the
I will. I'll bye-bye. Say this to the others. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I have a picture somewhere here. I'm not going to get it out right now, but it's of the, I think, your mother giving,
your grandmother,
sorry, correction, giving a bouquet of flowers to
Yes, King George the Sixth. Yes.
It was
the year, I think it was 1943, the year after we were given the George Cross. He visited Malta, and my grandmother, she was 17 at the time, was chosen to give to present him with a bouquet of flowers as part of his official visit.
I love that story, and then there's a sort of connection also with Rita, with your mother, Mary Rose. So tell us about that connection with the story.
In 1957, my mother was invited to go to London to represent Malta in the Federation of University Women, because she was a member. So my mother went to London, and she was chosen. There were five ladies, were chosen to speak to the Queen Mother, because they had a meeting with the Queen Mother as well as with the Princess Royal. And my mother was invited to both invitations, and she was chosen to speak to the Queen Mother. And my mother took with her the photo which her sister Mary was representing Malta University, to give the flowers, a bouquet of flowers, to the King George. And the conversation was very cordial, and the Queen Mother enjoyed it so much, and she said to her, "Thank your father for preserving this photo. I must also add something about Auntie Mary, Sue's grandmother. One time during the war, there was an air raid warning, and my grandfather, of course, had a dentistry clinic, the dental clinic in Valletta, so he went to find a shelter. And when he was there, there were lots of people, and in the corner, he saw a girl with a candle studying or reading, and he said to herself, 'My goodness, look at that girl, how anxious she is for her education.' When the air raid was over, it was all clear. He found out that it was his daughter, Mary, studying in the shelter. Now, something else about Auntie Mary. Auntie Mary was the essence of politeness. As a matter of fact, she was known as with the family, La Ducata. My mother was known as Idritta, the straight one, always straight, standing straight, and everything was straight with her. No ups and downs, no ifs and buts, everything straight. That's how she was known.
My mother was a Sigrita.
Why?
Because she used to, her father used to tell her things, and she could never say what she heard. And she always says that she went every Sunday to Gozo with her father, where he practiced his profession, because in Gozo there were no dentists. So he used to go up every Sunday, and she used to go up with him. So she knew how much he earned. So that's why she was called Isigrita. So they all had nicknames. Isigrita.
Isigrita.
How lovely. I wondered whether any of you have any memories of something that your mother's or grandmother might have said about their life at university. Did they ever refer to life at university?
They went carriage and horse. That is so different to today.
Yes. Gosh.
Imagine them. And they used to be given a shilling a week. And from the shilling, my mother, I don't know about the others, used to put aside some money to buy herself a piece of jewellery. So she didn't spend the shilling.
What a lovely idea. How clever. And what about
my mother was given 2 and 6 a week.
Oh, quite a lot.
Now, she used to buy a pair of Balito stockings, which cost 1 and 6. And she used to buy a pair every week.
And they always used to tear.
Yes. And she was always smartly dressed, and at that time they used to wear berets or hats or something like that. And another thing she used to say was, all the boys used to come and talk to her, and she was very popular, and they used to they'll go for a break sometimes. Now, she always said that they wanted to take a photo of the whole course, of the whole group, and two of them wanted to stand near my mother. One of them became a dermatologist, and the other one became a psychiatrist. They were both doctors, and they had a quarrel, a tiff between them, because both of them wanted to stand near my mother. So my mother said, "None of you are going to stand near me." Then next to her, she had Lydia Lucia, the other female in the course, and I don't know who was the next one.
I get the impression from the various interviews I've done that they all actually had quite a lot of fun.
yes. At university. So there's no need to feel very sorry for them that they were the only ones among a larger
and
company.
It's what they wanted to do. I mean, that's exactly why I said my grandmother was determined, because, I mean, she used to walk to work from Balsan to Sijiwi every day. We complain about traffic and being in the car for
Balsan
a long time.
Balsan to Sijiwi? Yes. And my
yes.
mother used to go to Lua. Oh, my God.
Yes. Lua. On foot. So I think it's what they wanted to do, and they were where they wanted to be. And I mean, it even reflects in my own mother, who, even though it was many years later, was the only woman in her course. She was the first woman auditor. So, you know, it also reflects that the determination to get an education.
Yes, yes. I think you should mention your mother by name.
She was Conivella at the time.
Yes, yes, she was, she was unable to be with us today, but
yes. One thing is very important is that my father started dentistry 100 years ago today, in 1919, and it's still going on for the fourth generation. Now, these people, the family, they all had graduates in the family, and their children have graduates as well, and then it's running into the fourth generation. They all have graduates.
Yes, that's
the ambition is where the photo of my grandfather with all the siblings graduated. That was quite rare because they graduated in different times.
Yes.
So they had to wear the toga for the photo to be all together.
Yes.
I think that is quite rare.
Yes, I have that lovely photo in front of me. I'll have to describe it, obviously, for the listeners.
Yes. It was unusual to have five graduates in one family at the same time.
There's Anthony.
And when Anthony graduated, he wasn't even 21 yet, and they didn't give him the warrant, and instead they sent him as a conscript.
Then there's Mary, Rita, Lucia, and Thomas.
Thomas. Okay. And the dentists both had postgraduate courses at Northwestern University in Chicago. And when Tommy went to study in his postgraduate, the dean of the university wrote to the dean in Malta of the dentistry, who was Professor Lapira at that time, and he told him, "We didn't expect such a good student and so well prepared and trained."
Unfortunately, I wish that this was a much longer program. There are some times when I really wish it was a much longer program. So I'd like to thank you all for being here today and for talking about this family, the De Mayo family, and these three amazing De Mayo sisters. And I think they're really a credit to the University of Malta.
Yes.
Thank you very much for asking us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to 100 Years of Women on Campus. If you would like to hear the programs again, just go to www.maltauniversitybroadcasting.com and click on webcasts. Join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. You have just listened to 100 Years of Women on Campus, produced and presented by Patricia Camilleri.